ओम, मैं ब्रह्मन प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ, मैं ब्रह्मन बेस्टव अपॉन अस बोथ द फ्रूट ऑफ नॉलेज, मे वी बोथ ऑब्टेन द एनर्जी टू एक्वायर नॉलेज, मे व्हाट वी बोथ स्टडी रिवील द ट्रूथ, मे वी चेरिश नो इल फीलिंग टुवर्ड ईच अदर, ओम पीस 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 बी अनटू ऑल। वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग द भक्ति योगा of Swami Vivekananda. I had already spoken 3 times on this subject. Let us summarize what we have covered so far. First of all, Swami Vivekananda defines bhakti. For the sake of this definition, he takes a prayer by Prahlada mentioned in the Vishnu Purana. This prayer of Prahlada runs as follows. Ya prithihi avivekanam vishayeshu anapayini tvam anusmaratah same hridayan ma apasarpatu. That deathless love which the ignorant have for the fleeting objects of the senses, as I keep meditating on thee, may not that love slip from my heart. This is a most wonderful definition. It means that all the material necessary for making us devotees of God is already with us. The problem is twofold now. At one, all the devotion, or in this case, the emotion. For what is bhakti or devotion? Devotion is nothing but emotion directed towards God. We have so much emotion. We are all emotional beings. All the time we are dealing in this world with emotions. It is very, very rare for people not to be having emotions. Sometimes, of course, we observe some people, they do have the emotions, but they do not express it. We call them dry people. But most of us have this emotion or love, and there are 2 problems associated with it. One, it is scattered, and second, it is not directed towards God. So what is bhakti or devotion? That all the emotions that we have, they must be united and directed towards God. In this connection, we remember when someone asks Sri Ramakrishna this question, when does one realize God? He gives a beautiful idea. When the 3 attractions, the attraction of a chaste wife towards her husband, the attraction of a mother for her only child, and the attraction of a miser for his worldly goods. When these 3 attractions are combined and directed towards God, then he will realize God. So the first problem is that our emotions or our loves towards the world are scattered, a little bit for money, a little bit for sensual pleasures, a little bit for country, a little bit for knowledge, a little bit for friends, a little bit for God. It is all scattered. And second problem is, it is to be combined and directed towards God. This is where the definition given by another definition that comes to my mind is, सात्वस्मिन् परम प्रेम स्वरूपा और सा परानुरक्ति ईश्वरे. दिस इज अ डेफिनेशन बाय सैंडिल्या. What this definition means, that true devotion to God, it must be directed towards the Supreme Lord, and this devotion towards God always comes when we know, when we have knowledge of God. In other words, when the will to live is directed towards God, it becomes bhakti. Bhakti is thus the total response of the human personality to what is regarded as the ultimate. Being a wholly positive movement, it has no place for the negative responses like hatred and fear. So Swami Vivekananda, having defined what bhakti really is, and then he says that bhakti yoga is the most natural and therefore the easiest path. Now in our last class we had discussed what is the meaning of easiest. I also had mentioned easiest doesn't mean that this particular path or bhakti yoga is superior because it is most natural and easy and the other yogas are inferior to it. That is not the meaning of easy. Whatever faculty a person has, manifestation of that faculty for that person becomes the easiest. Let us take some examples. Supposing there is a person who loves literature. If he is asked to take a scientific course to become a scientist or a doctor, it becomes a very difficult thing for him. Suppose somebody is very rational, then for such a person, if you ask him to become emotional, it becomes hard for him. There was a great world-famous psychologist, his name you all know, Jung. This Jung had classified all the people in this world into two categories, the introverts and the extroverts. An introvert likes to be alone, away from the people, and he would like to work all by himself, to be all by himself, with himself. If such an introvert is asked to take up jobs like salesman or meet people, and such a job becomes very hard for an introvert. If you ask an introvert to take up a research job, for example, he is very happy and he devotes all his energy towards it. Suppose you ask an extrovert that you sit, close your eyes, meditate or do some research work or be all by yourself, he feels miserable. But if you ask him to go out into the street, meet people, give a public speech, organize public meetings, etc., etc., he will be extremely happy, delighted. There is nothing wrong either with extroverts or introverts. It is not a disease. It is only a particular type of nature. So this illustration helps us in understanding why Swami Vivekananda has called Bhakti Yoga, the path of devotion, as the most natural and easiest. Most of the people, most of us, are emotional by nature. We want to exhibit emotions, and we want to see the same exhibition of emotions. There is an incident mentioned in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. There is a character called Dr. Sarkar, and this Sarkar is a sort of dry sort of person, not much given to emotions. So once during the course of conversation, he states that sometimes even his own family people misunderstand him because he doesn't express his emotions, feelings. Then Girish Chandra Ghosh, I think, he immediately says, "In that case, sir, you better express your feelings because your people anyway are not able to understand you. Probably they will understand you better if you express them." I have seen a cartoon, I forget what the title of that cartoon. A smart girl, she catches hold of a small boy, younger boy, says, "Let us play house." The boy says, "I don't know how to play house." "Okay, I will tell you what to do." Then the girl asks the boy, "Express your feelings." The boy says, "I do not know how to express feelings." The girl says, "Perfect. You can be my husband." So, most of us, we have emotions within us, and we react to all the situations in our life, in this world, with the manifestation of emotions. Sometimes, this becomes a little bit difficult. It even brings on misunderstandings and quarrels, and it also brings on unrest, because to be highly emotional, to be over-emotional, I'm afraid is not a very good quality in life. Sometimes we need to be very steady, very courageous, steadfast. For that we may have to suppress our emotions and feelings. So most of us, we are creatures of emotion. And there is also a home test to find whether we are emotional or not. Suppose somebody praises you. If your blood pressure goes up, suppose somebody criticizes you, and if your blood pressure goes up, definitely you are emotional. And as I mentioned earlier, what is devotion? All the emotion purified, unified, and directed towards God. So, for people who have lot of emotions and need to express their emotions and live in a world of emotions, the path of devotion is most suited. In that sense, it is the most natural, and since we have this faculty of emotion, it is very easy for us to become devotees. But as I said, these two problems are there. That one, that our emotions or our attachments or our loves, they are scattered, so they need to be unified. And second, that they should be directed towards one higher ideal, which is called God. So that is why Swami Vivekananda had said that Bhakti Yoga, or the path of devotion, is the easiest in this world. Now the second point we have to discuss now is, what is the goal of Bhakti Yoga? Of course, the goal of every yoga is self-knowledge, God-realization, realization of Brahman or Nirvana, etc., whatever name you would like to call it. The goal of every yoga is the union of the individual soul with the universal soul. By definition, yoga means that which joins. So naturally, the goal of Bhakti Yoga is also a union of the devotee with his beloved Lord. However, there are three answers given to this question, what is the goal of Bhakti Yoga? 1. Bhakti. 2. Realization of God. 3. Self-knowledge. All these, in a way, mean the same thing. Peace, samadhi, devotion, realization of God, self-knowledge, Brahma Vidya, Nirvana, all these are synonymous terms. Different people use different words, but the goal is absolutely the same. Sri Ramakrishna very often used to express this. He used to say that the goal of life is to realize God. The goal of human life is to love God. Bhakti is the one essential thing. The vision of God is the only goal of human life. So, realization, devotion, vision are all synonymous words. Now, here is an interesting thing. Bhakti or devotion is the one essential thing. Devotion means love for God. Only when we love God, that it can be called devotion. Loving any other thing is only an attachment. So why it is so natural for us to love? Because of certain reasons. First, love is another word for it's a longing for unity. All of us have a tremendous longing to be united with everything. Nobody wants separation from anything else. What we ordinarily call love is nothing but another way of saying, I want to be united with you. Love is a tremendous way of achieving this unity. Now the nature of love is such that when two people love each other, there are no more two people, there is only one. There is a beautiful Sufi story which illustrates this point. There was a lover and he went to his beloved who is in a cottage, and the doors of the cottage are locked. The beloved is inside the cottage, so the lover knocked at the door so that the doors can be open. From inside came the question, who is it? And the answer given is, it is I, my beloved. It is me. The doors did not open. Second time the lover knocked, and again the same question. Again the same answer, it is me, it is I. The doors did not open. Third time the lover knocked, and the same question. This time he answered, it is thou, my beloved. Immediately the doors were opened. A beautiful way of expressing that love unites the lover and the beloved. They no longer remain two separate individuals. They become one. Love is such a natural thing for all of us. Love is understood by every living creature in this world. It is said poetically, not only living creatures, but even non-living creatures. The rain loves the ocean so much that wherever it falls in the form of water, it immediately forms streams, canals, huge rivers, and longing to be united with their beloved, who is the sea. Similarly, all the mountains which spring from the bosom of this earth, they are all longing to be completely one with their origin, with their cause. There is not one living creature which does not understand the language of love. So it is said, when a person loves, even animals understand. It's a very common thing in our day-to-day life, you can see, that whenever we are passing a street, there may be some dogs. And if we are afraid of them, then they also become aware of our fear and they come barking at us. Because when we fear is the opposite of love. Fear is an emotion, opposite of love. Where there is love, there would be no fear. Somehow they may feel that we are enemies because we do not love them. We may harm them. Somehow they have a way of sensing it. So, love, but if you love, then immediately then there is no fear in you and they also understand. Even babies understand what is love. So, love is such a natural thing. We are all born with love. And our life in this world is a journey to develop this love into an all-consuming love, so that we can love the whole world. There is no limit for it. We want to become completely one with this world. It is the nature of love that it doesn't want anything to remain outside its reach. It wants to become completely one with this whole universe, with the whole life. Only this love is misunderstood. A miser loves his money. That is a misexpression, a wrong expression of his love. What he really wants is there should be no separation from anything else. Only when we become capable of loving, we become fulfilled. The more we develop our love, the more our lives become blessed with heavenly happiness. Our lives will be filled with great peace. We experience a sense of the greatest fulfillment only when we are capable of loving. It is the expression of this love that brings two people together. Marriage is but one way for the fulfillment of this desire, this longing for love, so that two people can become one. A woman, it is said, can never feel fulfilled until she gives birth to her children. It is another way of expressing her love, her unity. She wants to become one with the whole world. Similarly, when we long for worldly objects, it is truly our longing for unity. We want to become united with everything else. So, love is a longing for unity because reality is one. And because we are that reality, we cannot bear any separation, any duality, any distantness. That is why ours is the most natural way of achieving this unity. Second, love is a way of asserting our divine nature. Vedanta unequivocally asserts that we are all divine. Maybe we are all potentially divine, but doesn't matter. But we are all divine. Now, if we are divine, then we have to manifest our divinity. There is no other way. Take for example, suppose there is an apple seed and the whole apple tree is potentially there in that seed. As soon as you put that seed in the ground, it grows into a seedling and slowly into a plant. And in course of time, it becomes a tree. Now, if you ask the apple seed, would you like to become a mango tree? There is no way. That is because it has potential only to become an apple tree. It cannot become any other tree. Similarly, if it is true that we are all divine, then there is no other way for us but to manifest our divinity. And life is a constant journey in order to manifest our innate divinity. The meaning of evolution, according to Vedanta, is it is a way of gradually manifesting more and more of our divinity. In order to manifest our divinity, we have to have proper instruments. So, what the biologists call the evolution of the body, biological evolution, it is forging that instrument which becomes capable of becoming conscious of its own innate glory, innate divinity. And human body is the very peak of that biological evolution. If you ask, how do we know? That is because there are so many people, thousands and thousands of saints in the course of this evolution who have become human beings and who have striven, who had striven and realized, manifested their godlike nature, their divine nature. And so in the recent times, examples like Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Swami Vivekananda, disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, so many of Swamis of our own order, Ramana Maharshi, even more recent example, all these examples show that we do not need to evolve this body any further. This human body is more than adequate. So, this human body, which is the peak of biological evolution, is a way of asserting our manifesting, a perfect instrument for manifesting our divine nature. How do we manifest our divinity? It is through the way of love. For most of us, as I mentioned, love is a way of asserting our divine nature. There may be other ways. For example, a jnani, a man who treads the path of knowledge, he is also trying to assert his divine nature, trying to manifest his divine nature. But he may do it in a different way from the devotee. He may go into a mountain peak or a deep forest or a desert and sit there, close his eyes and contemplate on the reality, on Brahman. That's his way of trying to manifest his divine nature. But for most of us, love or emotional expression towards a noble goal, a higher goal, that is the way of asserting our divine nature. Again, there may be other people who do not have, who like to express their love, or who like to express their love in the form of serving the divine in every creature, especially human beings. That is the way of the Karma Yogin. So, love is our way, the way of the devotee, the way of a person who is treading the path of devotion, of asserting our divine nature. So this is the most suitable way. That is why love, or development of love and expression of love, is our way. And also, love is another way of forgetting body and mind. It is strange, when a person loves another person or another thing intensely, the first thing that happens is that he forgets his body and mind. This again, another way of manifesting our innate divinity. The divine, the spirit, the self is beyond body and mind. What stands in the way of our manifesting our divine nature? It is the identity with our body and mind. We are so intensely, so intimately identified with our body and mind that we are incapable of rising beyond this body and mind consciousness, body and mind identity. But if there is love, that is one way of forgetting our body and mind. When we love somebody else or something else, we forget our body and mind. Take one common example. Suppose there is a young man or a young woman who loves music, say rock music, very much. I have seen news where there are music festivals organized in cities like Manchester or Reading or Edinburgh. Literally thousands of men and women gather there. Maybe it is raining, maybe it is intensely cold, and there is no space excepting for standing. And even in that pelting cold night, rain, hold on the umbrellas, and not even much food or drink to sustain them. Whole night they are standing there, hearing the singing of their favorite singers on the stage, and they feel so much fulfilled. Now what is happening here? That simply these people, because of their love for the music, they have overcome the idea of body and mind. But if those same people are asked, why don't you read some sacred book, or why don't you attend prayers in the church or in a temple, simply they will not even discuss the matter. They will go and tuck themselves into the bed under the quilt, and they feel very happy. But as soon as you say that their favorite singer is singing, immediately they throw off their quilts and run to the place. Similarly, a person who loves God, he doesn't mind cold, heat, inconvenience. He forgets even food, drink, everything. Such is the nature of love. Man is prepared to sacrifice his body and his everything for the sake of love. Swami Vivekananda gives a beautiful example. Suppose there is a woman, and supposing one day she is walking in London in broad daylight in a street. Suddenly a dog comes barking her way. What would be her reaction? Immediately she runs away from the place to protect herself from the dog. But supposing, he says, next day the same woman is walking in the same street, but this time she has her small baby with her, and a lion comes and attacks her. What does she do? She will stand and fight the lion. How come this difference? Because this time she is ready to sacrifice her life for protecting her baby. As long as her life is there, she would not mind fighting the lion. What is the cause of this tremendous transformation in the same person? It is her tremendous love for her baby. We hear so many of these examples. Mothers or elder sisters or brothers jumping into waters in order to save their beloved sisters, younger sisters or brothers. Similarly, a patriot, for the sake of his country, he gladly gives up his body. He is prepared to die. And we know that even today many people can do that. And so there are also thousands of other people who are prepared to give up their lives for the sake of their religion, for the sake of their God. Maybe sometimes they are fanatical, they have a misunderstanding about their own religion, about their own idea of God. But the basic principle, it is the same. Wherever there is love, and love means sacrifice, and without sacrifice, there is nothing called love. Love and sacrifice are synonymous words. Where there is love, there is the forgetting of the body and mind. And fourthly, no one can put a limit to love. If we ask ourselves, how much are we expected to love? Is there anyone who can put a limit and say, thus far and no further? We can express or manifest our love. We would like to express or manifest to the infinite degree. But there is a problem. We are limited in our love. This limitation is not belonging to love. This limitation belongs to the person or the situation. So limitation is said to be of two types. One, our mind, and second, every object in this world is finite and changeable. First, our mind. The nature of the mind is that it is fickle. It is changing. So because it is the mind through which we express our love, though love itself doesn't know any limitation, it is infinite, yet because of this instrument, the instrument is very limited. Minute by minute it is changing. Sometimes, of course, by training, by discipline, by austerity, by tapasya, the mind is made to be a little more permanent. But still, the mind is limited in its ways. And therefore, our expression of love also becomes limited. Second, every object in this world is finite. It is constantly in a flux, changing. Therefore, it is not possible to love any object in this world to an infinite degree. If we have to love infinitely without limitation, the object which we are trying to love must be there, and we also must be there. As I said, we are also changing, and the object is also changing. This is expressed beautifully in Buddhist philosophy. There is a beautiful saying, no man steps into the same river twice. Sometimes we go to take bath in a river. Sometimes some people, especially Hindus, take bath in the same river whole lives. And if you ask them, of course they say, I take bath in the same river. But the thing is, the banks are the same, or in a way they appear to be the same, but nothing is same. Our bodies are changing. Everything in this world is changing. The water, every moment is flowing. Fresh water is coming. The plants on both sides of the banks of the river are also growing and changing. So everything is changing in that sense. No man steps into the same river twice. The man also is changing. The river is also changing. So there is this limitation is there. Then without infinite love, and infinite love is called God. That is another name for God. Limitless love, infinite love, perfect love. This is called God or Kingdom of Heaven. How can we achieve that? And if we do not achieve that, we cannot fully express our divine nature. So it is said that our soul is infinite, and God also is infinite, and therefore when our soul becomes one with God, that is the ultimate that is the perfect union, that is called samadhi. So it is said that we should practice detachment from this world. What is detachment? Detachment is not running away. Detachment is not being cold-blooded. Detachment is not indifference, though it is often understood in that sense. Detachment is expanding our attachment, our love, to such a degree that everything is included in that. So it is said that God alone is worthy object. So according to Ramanuja, no worldly object is worthy of being loved by us because it is finite, it is changing. God alone is worthy of our object. Then, as we discussed before, our mind is limited. How can we attain that infinite or unlimited love when our own mind is so limited? So it is said in the words of Sri Ramakrishna that pure mind and pure Atman are the same, meaning when we can purge our mind of all our small loves, infinite number of, limitless number of loves that we have towards worldly objects, and when it is all directed towards God, then our mind becomes purified. It becomes a perfect instrument reflecting the infinite Atman. A pure mind is nothing but pure Atman, because at that stage the mind ceases to function and as it were only the pure soul seems to be doing everything. And because the Atman according to Vedanta is infinite, therefore it becomes capable of becoming, of loving the infinite which is God. So then at that stage, the love of the individual soul becomes unlimited, infinite. To make an illustration of this, imagine there is this infinite ocean and there is a drop of water somewhere. And if the drop of water is left out without allowing any contact with the ocean, very soon that small drop of water becomes evaporated, and which means it loses its existence. Now put that small drop of water in the ocean and it becomes infinite. So there are only two ways left out for this to happen. Either the drop of water has to go and fall into the infinite ocean, or the infinite ocean should come and fall onto the drop of water. Both are the same. Though it may look like redundant expression, but there is a meaning in this. Devotees, they consider themselves as drops of water. And they are, through prayer, through meditation, etc., they are somehow trying to fall into the infinite ocean. And when they lose all bonds, all limitations, all attachments, at that point they have complete surrender. Surrender is another word for complete union. So when they have complete surrender to God, which means their eye is permanently lost in the infinite eye of the divine, then there is no individual, there is no God, there is no duality, there is only one. Whereas the jnanis, who do not admit of the personal God, they like to consider themselves as the infinite Brahman, aham brahmasmi. But the result is also same, as though they bring on the nature of the Brahman to absorb their separated individual Atman or Jivatva. The result is the same, as though the ocean has come and fallen on the individual drop of water, and there are no two again. These are only two modes of expression. But mind you, it is not merely intellectual gymnastics or linguistic gymnastics. Depending upon what view one takes, one's method of sadhana or spiritual practice differs completely. Those who are jnanis, they sit, close their eyes and go on trying to make their minds concentrate on one particular idea, I am Brahman, I am the infinite, I am God himself. For that purpose, they have to, as it were, by force, cut asunder all their attachments. It is like climbing a high mountain straight, whereas the devotees who believe that they are individual jivas and they are small, so their way is through prayer, through supplication, through japa, through meditation, through pilgrimage, through service of the other devotees, employing all these methods, they also try to slowly surrender themselves, that is, overcome their individuality, lose their individuality in the infinity of the divine. So the methodology, the goal is the same, but the methodology differs. So now, coming back to the definition of Swami Vivekananda, what is the goal of Bhakti Yoga? It is realization of God. It is self-knowledge. So from this, we have this point that God alone is infinite and unchanging, and therefore He alone is worthy of our love. He is the goal of all our loves. Now, when all our emotions or attachments, they are withdrawn from the worldly objects and purified, made concentrated into one and directed towards God, that's what we said is the goal of the path of devotion. Now, we have to be clear. Why God? We have already discussed why God. What is God? We must have a clear concept of what is God. What is His nature? We may say, why so much of discussion, dry discussions about God? Don't we know what God is? Well, the subject is very necessary. One has to be very clear as what is God and what is His nature. Though all of us agree that God exists and all of us believe that the goal of life is to become, to go towards God or to become one with God, our concepts about God vary. And therefore, there may be, and there is, lot of conflict, differences of opinion, ending in bloodshed, in feuds. Nowadays especially, there are certain faiths which insist that their faith alone is supreme. If everybody believes that there is only one God, and if everybody is traveling towards the same God, there would be no conversion. But the fact that there is the point of conversion clearly indicates that our concept of God is not as clear as it should be. So, what is God? What is His nature? What type of conception do we have to have, and how to approach? These are some of the points which we will discuss in our next class, which is next week, that is on the 25th. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.